Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast, brought to you every week by our sponsors PrecisionHydration.com, electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat, and Precision Fuel 30 gels and drink mixes to give you enough carbohydrate to perform at your best. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. Right, everybody, welcome to the show. I hope you've had a great week. We've had some fantastic racing out in Ironman Portugal and 70.3 Portugal. We've had a whole bunch of team members racing out there this weekend, and it's feeling like it's getting to be the end of the season, the wrap of the season. We've pretty much only got, I think, one more set of races going. We've got guys out at Ironman Arizona, and I think that's it for this year for us. So somehow it feels like we've got ourselves through 2021, through the race season, which is amazing. First up, let's kick this off. I feel really bad for any of our listeners who were due to be racing out in Ironman, California this weekend. Obviously, there was a ton of interest in the pro race. Some kind of hideous, it's been described as a weather bomb, you know, wind and rain, too unsafe for people to ride. Ironman made the call 1 hour before the race was due to kick off. It had already been shortened for the age groupers. They were going to still try and run a pro race, but there was decided that that was unsafe. Athletes of mine out in California said they believe it was absolutely the right decision, that the weather was beyond hideous out there that day. So there's lots of rumbling on social media about it being a wrong decision. I think you've got to go with the decision of the professionals, and they've made it in the, you know, with keeping everybody safe in mind. I do really feel, though, for the 3,000 age groupers who've trained really hard for that event and don't get to do it. So if you're one of them, my heart goes out to you. It really does. My best advice is don't try and find another race right now. Don't try and squeeze something in. There's going to be, you know, the occasional person who's in the fortunate position of being able to go out to Ironman Cozumel and get a race in. But if that's not you, I think the big takeaway is your body still has all that fitness in it. And it's tempting to think because you didn't get to race, your fitness hasn't moved on. And next season, when you look back, I think it's difficult if you haven't sort of put a score on the board as it was. But next season accepts that you do have that level of fitness in your body. You've got a season's worth of training that you've already wrapped away, and you'll be able to move on to another higher level next season, just as you would have done if you had raced. And I know that it's disappointing, and I know that it's upsetting, but you will be able to move your performance onto another higher level this time next season. So yeah, really, really gutted that that pro race didn't get to happen. Remains to be seen what's going to happen. I think Gustav Iden's got to go and validate his Kona slot somewhere. Whether that will be in Cozumel alongside Christian Blumenfeld, who knows? But I was really looking forward to him and Jan Frodeno going head to head. Shame it didn't happen at this one. We have got a fantastic age group interview for you this week. But before I go to that, I just want to give a shout out to sponsors PrecisionHydration.com. They make great sachets of electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. So if you've not used their product, the first step is go to their website, take their online sweat test. It'll give you some really good information and a good lead as to whether you're a very heavy or a very salty sweater, because not everybody sweats equally. Me in particular, I sweat tons of sodium in a liter of sweat. I've got something like 3 times more in there than the average person, which means when I race in really hot conditions, I really struggle to stay hydrated and suffer from hyponatremia. When I'm training indoors, I get a lot of cramps in the pool, on the turbo trainer, even on the treadmill. And keeping your sodium in balance is the key to keeping your water levels in balance and preventing those. Well, there's evidence that that really helps prevent the cramps from happening. So if that's something that's affecting you, check out precisionhydration.com. Your first order, you can get 15% off with the code OXYGENADDICT15. And while you're there, you can also try their new superb Fuel 30 gels and Fuel 30 drink mixes. Each one's got exactly 30 grams of carbohydrate in, so it takes away the guesswork of how many calories and how many grams of carbs you're taking in for your training and for your racing. And with that, we're going to go over to this week's interview of the week with Team Oxygen Addict member Andrew Garside. Andrew, welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you join us. How are you doing today?
I'm really well, thank you, Rob. Yeah, good week so far.
You see, we've not shared with the listeners already. Andrew's had to put his interview back because he's been really struggling with a head cold. God bless you for joining us. So if there's any coughs and sniffs all the way through, man, that's totally understandable. Are you feeling a bit better? That's the first thing.
I am. So I was putting a positive spin on it, but I'm not training this week. I'm having a week off whilst I just throw this cold off, but feeling a lot better this morning. Thank you.
Well, good for you. That's a really important message for people to hear right from the bat, isn't it? It's like it's okay to take a step back when you're not feeling well.
Absolutely.
Right. Let's paint the picture then. Let's paint the story of a little bit about you and your background. Start with who you are, your age, what you do for a living, and then we'll go into your triathlon story from there.
Okay. Thanks, Rob. So I'm 56. My home is in North Yorkshire. I live just at the edge of the North York Moors. For the last 16 years, my desk job, my career has been based in London. So the majority of week has been down there. I work in an investment business. We back private companies and for the long term and then help them develop and grow.
So first up then, before, I guess, pre-pandemic, how did that work for you? Were you on the train back and forth every day? Were you down in London for the week and back up for the weekends? How did that work?
No, so I've got somewhere to stay down in London. So I used to go down in the early days. I used to go down Mondays, back Fridays.
Yeah.
And then as I got a bit more senior in the business, I eased that back a little bit. So now it's usually 3 days a week in London.
Okay.
But it is a weekly commute every week. And that does bring challenges because I need two running routes. I need two pools.
Yeah.
I need to use the watt bike in the gyms in London. So there is a bit of to and froing, a bit of extra planning for the training.
Do you know, it's going to be interesting to explore this because so many of the people that we talk to have a similar situation, whether it's a massive commute like yours that involves staying over or a commute into the city that involves finding a watt bike in the gym. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting to chat through how you've managed that and how you fit the training in around, you know, the life that you have. And also it's good for people listening to reflect and kind of go, well, okay, I thought I had challenges and it turns out they're kind of not the same as this. So yeah, we'll work out how you fit those out as well. Right. When did you get into triathlon? And what's your journey in triathlon been then?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, the first thing is I wasn't very sporty at school. My brother Nick still teases me that I was the only person that failed at athlete's badge at Cubs.
that's harsh.
It's harsh. It really is harsh. I had a bike. I did some fun runs, but I started late. My first triathlon was when I was 43. My good friend Richard, who's a very strong cyclist, persuaded me to do the Newbury Sprint Triathlon 2008. And at the same time, my dad decided that he wanted to do a sprint tri. So my sister Alison, who sadly no longer with us, persuaded the whole family to do the Ilkley Sprint Triathlon in 2008, 2009. So that's how it started. I was pretty rubbish. Then had a bit of a break. In the meantime, my brother Nick had moved to the States. My good friend Richard had moved to the States. Because we didn't see each other, we agreed every year we'd meet up for an event. One of those events in 2015 was an Olympic distance tri called the Savage Man in Maryland.
Okay.
I quickly followed that up with the Castle Howard Olympic distance in the year after 16. And I'd moved up from being rubbish to being poor to average. So I don't know how that qualified me to decide that I was going to do good enough to do a 70.3. But I decided that because my brother was then doing Ironman distances, I'd do a 70.3.
I see.
And I entered a local race called Cleveland Steelman.
Oh, yes. Right. Is that still going? Is that still going, the Cleveland Steelman?
It is, yeah. I don't think it happened this year, or maybe it did, but it's still going. And for the first time I actually trained, I downloaded a one-page training program from the internet and followed it. I mean, I followed it. I did the swim distance, didn't do any of the drills, naturally. But look, I did all right. Just over 6 hours. Didn't
very good. Yeah.
And then the following year, entered another local race with a good friend, Jess, who's a great swimmer, and did the Sundowner. Quite a pivotal race for me, because it was awful. The time was only 10 minutes slower than the first 70.3, but the run was really dreadful. I completely caved in the run, no energy, and I had no idea why. And like, I had two big thoughts after that. The first was, blimey, I'm now in my 50s. I'm not a proper athlete. I'm just too old to do 70.3s. Maybe I should just go back to sporty and fun runs. But I guess the second thought, which I'm glad persevered, was, there's just something here I didn't understand. Something went wrong, and I don't understand why. Now, with hindsight, I know exactly why, and you know why, because I pushed too hard on the bike. It was very windy. I didn't eat, so I fell apart on the run. But I used that to find some help. And somebody at the York Triathlon Club pointed me towards Team Oxygen Addict. And then I started to understand a bit more about proper training.
It's interesting that, isn't it, that the reaction to going just a little bit harder on the bike and not quite getting the nutrition and calorie intake on the bike correct can be the difference between your experience at Steelman, which was, that was awesome, and your experience at Sundowner, which is, not only is this awful, but I'm clearly too old and I should give this up. And this is a terrible experience.
Look, the run at Sundowner is very flat. At one point, the road just goes under the railway bridge. And I just couldn't run over this little humpback bridge. And I thought, what is wrong with me? I was feeling terrible. But as you say, just down to those simple things.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the Cleveland Steelman. I was working over your way on the North York Moors when I got into triathlon. And the club who run that was the first real tri club session I went down to. And there was a lovely lady called Sandra there who I was quite nervous going in as a non-swimmer. And she was brilliant. She really looked after me. And then I entered the Steelman sort of 10 years later when I'd moved away and saw her at the event. And,
oh, wow.
Managed to go in. She had no idea who I was, of course, but I always think it's nice when there's one person who really makes a difference in your journey and you can remember them. And I got to go over and sort of say, I don't know who I am, but thanks so much for like nursing me through my first proper swim session. That's great.
No, very fond of that race. It's very local. You just pitch up in the morning. Two, three other people. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, so that's when you crossed paths with us and you came on board. Was it just prior to lockdown you came on board with us?
Yep.
Early 2020.
I joined in 2020. I think I just managed to do my swim test, my FTP in London, and then we all went home. So 2020 was a non-event racing, or we did manage to do Bowood, if you remember, that freezing cold.
Outlaw X.
Absolutely. Outlaw X. Yeah. Thank you for the correction. Freezing day and when they cut the swim short. But other than that, there was a lot of virtual racing, but great fun nonetheless. My kind of first year of base training.
It's interesting, isn't it, looking back? I don't know whether you find the same thing, but even if we take this outside of triathlon, for me, 2020 and 21 seem to kind of somehow have blurred into the same year. And I have to constantly, I've actually got two calendars on the wall still as I look back to try and get my bearings in time where we were, because it feels like none of the usual markers of events were there in 2020. And even Christmas didn't really happen.
You're obviously right, because I was confusing Bowood with Outlaw X. but you're right, because normally a year follows a cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have your first race or an early race and then your late race, and then it gets dark and you get ready for Christmas. And none of that really happened as normal in 2020.
Yeah. And we ended up having loads of Swift stuff happen. So it was like the winter extended all the way through to about early September. And then we had a few weeks of a season, and then it was back into winter. Yeah, it's just weird to try and get your head around.
Yeah. Well, hopefully let's not go back there again.
No, yeah, fingers crossed. So you had a really strange first season with us that involved, you know, I can remember from our point of view, basically rebuilding plans on a 3-week cycle to try and adjust to whatever was going on in the real world. And we ended up getting Outlaw X, and was probably the peak of the season there. How was that event for you?
It was a good event. I did okay. Actually, I think I did more than okay, because it was my first event where I felt I was in control and I knew what I was doing.
Okay.
It was disappointing the swim was cut short, because it was cut short to 750.
It was meters, bitterly it? Cold that morning, wasn't it? It was. I'm just thinking back. It was. In fact, I'll have an admission here. It was so cold that I was down for the weekend in the camper van, and I drove home, slept at home, and then drove back again, really. Thinking, there's no way I can stay in the camper van. It was about 4 degrees overnight, wasn't it?
Yeah. And weirdly, the lake didn't feel too cold. But when you got out, I think it was the air temperature was about 7 or 8.
It was. And it was freezing lining up for it, wasn't it, for everybody?
Yeah. And I remember getting back to T1. And I decided to put my cycling jersey on, but couldn't actually do the zip up. And you looked around T1, everyone's the same.
Yeah.
Shaking with their hands, asking for help, trying to get their zips up.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was fine. So I think, I don't know, the bike was just over 3 hours. And I think it's still my best half run, which was like 155.
Okay, so good.
I felt in control, knew what I was doing. Put the demons of the sundowner to rest, and used it as a base to move forward from.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's a good setting of the scene, then, I think, to move into the 21 season. What were your reflections before we go there? What were your reflections at the end of that 2020 season about where you wanted to go forward into 2021 and what you wanted to do? Because it sounds like the arc had kind of been, from the experience at Sundowner, am I getting too old for this, to be in a very different position after Outlaw X?
Yes, it's a good question. And it takes me back to the first conversation I ever had with you before I joined, when I said something like, I'm not very competitive. I don't want a coach that pushes me. I'll find my own steady way. And then the second thing I said is, and I'm never going to do a full distance. So, end of 2020, I'm enjoying the training, I'm fitting it in well, I'm feeling stronger, and I'm decided to plan a fuller season for 2021, and I suddenly gained massive commitment to do a full distance. So, none of what I said in the first conversation we had was actually true, was it? It's just what I felt at the time to kind of be cautious.
Maybe here's the thing. Maybe it was true at the time as well. And maybe your truth changes over time.
Maybe it does as you build confidence. True.
Yeah. Okay. So at what point, you have to remind me here, at what point did you decide you were going to go for the full in the 2021 season? Had you decided that at the end of 2020 after Outlaw X, or did that kind of develop over the winter?
No, it was at the end of 2020 season, entering into the winter, thinking about what I was going to do for 2021, feeling a bit like looking forward to a more optimistic 2021 when the world was going to open up.
Yeah.
And also there was a bit about me which was, if I'm going to do a full, then why not now?
Yeah.
You know, if it's amazing in the club to see the excitement of and the intrepidation of people thinking about their first full distance, and it gets into you. So I knew that I was going to do one. And as soon as I knew I was going to do one, it was, well, I'll do one straight away then. So I'd already been looking at all the different races and picking which one I thought was the target. And it was actually, I think I'd landed on Tallinn, and there was somebody posted in the group that there were some spare places going at Copenhagen. And I booked I booked one immediately. So the plan was build up the season and Copenhagen in August 2021. But of course, it didn't quite play out like that, did it?
No, not quite.
No.
Before we go into, you know, like the Copenhagen thing, let's go back to the start of the conversation. Your image of yourself as a kid, you've got is it your older brother by any chance?
No. So my...
There's a younger brother.
Yeah. So bit about the family. So my sis was 2 years younger than me. She was the proper athlete.
Okay.
Sadly died of cancer. But a big inspiration.
I'm really sorry.
She was 7 years ago. You know, we move on. Amazing, a lovely, lovely woman. Fearsome on a bike. Amazing cyclist. She was a physio in the British cycling team, and she was part of that group of women cyclocross that lobbied for women's only races.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, and notable that she won the women's race in the Three Peaks cyclocross 2 years running in the 90s.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Alice, wow. Yeah. Right, so if anyone listening doesn't know what the Three Peaks cyclocross is, they've got to go away and pause the podcast now and go and check that out, because I've run the Yorkshire Three Peaks route, and the whole way around, the pal I was with and I were saying, how in God's name do people ride their bikes around this route? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's a surreal race.
And
I would recommend anybody, I'm not sure I'd recommend anybody to do it. I have done it, by the way. But just to go to that pub car park where it starts, for a world famous race that starts in a pub car park.
So there's a little snuck the end there. you've done the Three Peaks cyclocross.
Yeah, well, you know, I said that me, my brother Nick, and my friend Richard got together every year to do events. We did that in memory of my sis, and we decided what should we do, and we did the Three Peaks cyclocross.
Oh, amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, so come on, we've got a little bit of we've turned down at the corner, but I want to explore this.
Just to finish off, my little brother is 9 years younger than me, and he's the one that gives me all my grief.
Got you. All right. Okay, there we go. So we've got the taunting younger brother dynamic. All right, absolutely. That's great. Yeah. So the Yorkshire Three Peaks cyclocross then. Talk us through that a little bit in terms of, like, I know how far the running race is and what the route is for that, but I know it's different than the cyclocross race. So tell us about that. How many people do it, for starters?
Look, I think it's about 600 or 700. It's really hard to get into.
Yeah.
You'll be a bit lucky. So we did pull a favour. One of my sister's old mates had three. So we actually got, we basically said, get us all three in or not. So we got all three in. It's the Yorkshire Three Peaks, Penigent, Wernside, and Ingleborough.
Yeah.
They're all really steep. There's no way you can cycle up them. So you have to walk up them with a cyclocross bike on your back. And actually, I trained quite well for that.
Yeah.
So walking up steep hills with a bike on my back was okay. The bit that I wasn't ready for was the technical descents.
Yeah.
And just the mental pressure of concentrating on really rough ground on all those three descents.
Yeah.
Was just torturous.
And follow the running route? Or do you go straight up and straight down?
Not dissimilar. You do some of the route and some slightly different routes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Epic event. Unbelievable. So
hats off, man.
I would definitely not do again. Give me another full distance Ironman any day.
You know, I'm picturing the route that we ran. and tried to imagine doing that on a cyclocross bike, and there's just no way. I don't think I could ride it on my full suspension mountain bike, let alone.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What a great tribute to her. That I think, did you get to the finish and feel that you'd really done something that she would have?
Yeah, it was just one of those amazing weekends of so much emotion. One of her old cyclocross buddies, Isla Roundtree, helped us round and coached us round, and she was there at the finish. And so was my sister's daughter, who said, "Look, you did really well, but she would have kicked her off. She'd have been here." And she was true.
Oh, fantastic. All right. I thought that's a wonderful story. I love that. So back to triathlon then. Your 2021 season. So you've got Copenhagen lined up, and you had Holcomb in the run-up as well, kind of the race preparation half.
Yeah, I did a full season. So we'd started with the Yorkshire Duathlon, then we did Holcomb. Should have been Copenhagen, which had to be switched to the Dalesman. And then ended the season with a busy trio. So we did the Dalesman, Outlaw, Bowood, and a charity try at the end within 4 weeks of each other. So busy was busier.
Yeah. Classic. So let's go to Holcomb then. Holcomb was an excellent day for it this year. We had a beautiful classic British summer's day, didn't we? And we were really lucky because if I remember rightly, just after it was forecast to be thunderstorms, wasn't it, on the day, and they ended up not happening until everyone was driving home. And it was just one of those, well, from a spectator's point of view, it was a beautiful hot sunny day. I think it was possibly a touch too hot for the poor people running.
Yeah. Well, that was a feature of that race, and an important lesson actually. So it was a great venue. The transition is really, and the parking and everything is just so easy to navigate. The lake was great, and I really enjoyed the race. And it was the first race where there were lots of team members.
Yeah.
So great atmosphere. And overall did okay. So my first race under six, you know, well under 6 hours. I did get caught up racing with Bill, teammate, on the bike. Slightly overcooked my power target on the bike. So determined it was 2:50 when I think the target was 3 hours. And of course, I paid for it on the run. The classic Garside mistake of repeating what I did at Sundowner. The lesson there, I think, was when I got to the run, I was too focused on the pace. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. During the bike, we hadn't realized it was getting hotter and more humid. And we were all struggling. And my heart rate was high. I just couldn't get it down. So overall, fun race, tough run. Lesson, when it gets hotter and humidity rises, just keep an eye on your heart rate and maybe just tone down the bike and tone down the run.
It was really humid as well, wasn't it? I'm thinking back, it was one of those days that people were describing as disgustingly hot, sitting around. We were sweating just sitting around. And I think that it's something that we possibly don't recognize much. And I'm going to push much harder, I think, this year, that effectively temperature is a hill, you know? And what I mean by that is if you're running and you're trying to sustain pace on the flat and you come to a hill, you know, you have to slow the pace down. It's just natural. Temperature's the same exact thing. When it gets above 20 degrees centigrade in the UK, and we're not acclimated to it, we have to accept that pace has to decrease because our body's dealing with that heat stress. It is another stress on the body. And especially in a course like Holcomb that's already got the hilly challenge in there already, it becomes so hard to run to any kind of pace target, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the other thing is when you're competing, you don't feel the heat and the humidity rising when you're on the bike.
Yes, very true. because you just feel pleasantly warm, and the ambient airflow over you keeps you pleasantly cool, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I made a mistake. So I, for that race, I wanted to focus on power for the first time, real discipline. And I put my power numbers on a second screen.
Okay.
My heart rate was on the first screen. And I hadn't noticed my heart rate creeping up beyond what it would normally have been.
Mm.
And so if you don't feel the heat rising, but the sun's out and your heart rate's going up, it means it's getting hotter.
Yeah. And especially in, you know, I think your experience is really common of most people's experience. In yours, you were racing a guy that you knew, and you both ended up pushing each other on a little bit faster than you would ideally have wanted to. That's most people's experience of an other woman or man who keeps overtaking you. You know, I think that there is that sort of real discipline needed to kind of go. I mean, we're lucky these days. Power numbers are so available to everybody, even with the best bike split, power targets. But we have to be mentally disciplined to stick to those numbers, because our brain will play a trick on us and say, you know, well, that's okay. You're having a good day. You can put another 20 watts on. You feel really good. Maybe the power meter's under reading today. It never is.
No, that's exactly what happened on the bike. I was having far too much fun with Bill Anderson.
Yeah. Bless. And you put each other in a hole. Okay. So the run experience then, was it the same as Sundowner, or did you feel it was simply you couldn't quite run to how you'd hoped?
It wasn't the same as Sundowner.
Good.
Because I knew what was going on. And all I had to do was to ease off the pace, walk a bit, get my heart rate down, and then I could restart running.
Yeah.
And all the time, I knew exactly what I'd done. So rather than beat myself up about it, I was kind of jokingly thinking, I know what Coach Rob Wilby is going to tell me, and I know what my wife's going to tell me. And I was just slightly chuckling about the fact that I'd done it again.
There we go.
There you go.
It's great, though, to have. I tell you what, I'm going to give you a pat on the back here. It's great to be able to do a mid-race reset, to have the presence of mind to go, okay, that wasn't the plan. Stop, walk, reset, stick to the plan. Because it would have been really easy to carry on for 10K, 12K, 14K, pushing on to a plan you'd already written. And then it would have been a really long last 7 kilometers of walk at that point. So you did really well.
Yeah. Look, I'm 5:53, you know, first 6 hours. I was happy with that.
Yeah, delighted. Good. Okay. And then reflections afterwards are obviously, okay, I've had another insight into my athletic personality. My athletic personality keeps writing checks that my body's not quite ready to cash. We have to have a negotiation with that athletic personality to accept we're going to do things slightly different at full distance, or we're going to get really punished. Okay.
Well, absolutely. So moving on to the full distance and the races for the rest of the year, I think it's fair to say that I did learn that lesson.
Yeah, well, that's great. Okay, so going forwards into, originally it was planned to be Copenhagen. At what point did you make the decision to pull the pin on that?
Quite close to the race.
Yeah.
If you recall, I was really determined to get to Copenhagen. And up until 3 weeks before, I think you could still travel, and then you couldn't. I had clocked that the Dalesman, which is a local race to me, was on the same date. And it still had availability. So I switched about 3 weeks before. And if you remember, I had a conversation with you. And I wasn't disappointed to switch. That's not the right phrase. But I was so focused on going to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
That I had to mentally switch. And what you said, look, the Dalesman is not better or worse than Copenhagen. It's just going to be different. And that was just the mental nudge I needed to focus on all the positives of the Dalesman. You know, it's a great race run by Try Hard Events.
Yeah.
40 minutes drive, no stress of traveling. I'm going to have more teammates there, more friends and family. And suddenly I've got six great positives. The only thing that wasn't a positive is that Copenhagen was relatively flat, and I'd mentally got that in my prep, and all my long bikes had been flat. And the Dalesman is 2,000 meters of climbing.
Funny that, with it being called the Dalesman. But
exactly. When you looked at the profile, I think what you said something like, oh, blimey, you're going to get your money's worth out of that bike.
And I did. So for people, I mean, this is also a nice aside, but for people who are considering doing the Dalesman next year, I mean, Rob and the team at Try Hard, again, going back to the day when I started, Rob used to run, in fact, possibly still does. He used to run a sort of Wednesday night duathlon out of a local social club where you would hang your bike on the sort of the fence that surrounded the local football pitch and turned up £2 on the night. It was brilliant. It was a really, you know, a lot of people got into the sport through Rob. And when he eventually grew this into a company that put events on, he's one of the guys, I think, who, I mean, to say his heart's in the right place is, you know, doing him a disservice. His wife would make sandwiches for everyone after the events, and it was great, you know. Oh, it was and so it's great to see him go on to have a company that puts events like that and Helvellyn and all the other ones he does put on. Mm. What was the overall event feel like at Dalesman in terms of how many people were there? Did you have that sense of this is a small local event, or wow, there's something about this?
A bit of both, really. It's a small, compact event. It's based at Ripon Racecourse. Great, great venue. Very good lake. I'm guessing about 200 to 300 do the 70.3 and about the same number do the full distance.
Yeah.
The bike course is beautiful. It's a bit exposed and windy on the peaks. It's two laps. But it's absolutely beautiful, and you have a reasonably flat start and end, and then all the hills are in the middle third of the lap, and it's very cozy and friendly atmosphere.
Yeah,
and it's an easy, accessible race to do, and I would strongly recommend it.
Yeah, jewel in the crown being that bike course, knowing the rides through the Dales there, you've got that combination of beauty and very decent road surfaces, which is quite rare in the UK.
They are good road surfaces because of the Tour de Yorkshire.
Yeah,
it's a definite positive, and better than the roads I normally ride on in the North Yorkshire Moors.
What are the climbs like? How many sort of notable climbs did you have per lap?
There's none of the really big climbs that would feature in a sportive.
Okay. So you're not over butter tubs or anything like that, yeah, in it?
No, it's just a lot of up and down. I adapted to the climbing very well. I'm not too bad at climbing. It was just the mental adjustment of thinking about a flat 180K versus a hilly 180K. Mm. So, but the way I adapted is, I really don't mind climbing on the tri bike, which has surprised me. You can ride at 200 watts on the flat, or you can ride at 200 watts up a hill. So don't mentally create a hill to be any worse than it is. You know, you're going slowly on a tri bike. It's only a kilogram or so heavier than your road bike. It's fine. Just get on with it.
Yeah. You know,
take it easy. Enjoy the views. Don't respond to everybody that's sprinting up the hills, which if I hadn't have had Hokum, I could have got sucked into that. And I was so focused on the Dalesman of riding my own race, even though I didn't have my power meter, which we shouldn't forget. We'll go back to that. it was fine. It was a great ride, day's ride out.
Yeah, nice. It sounds like you did a really good job of kind of recalibrating 3 weeks out from an Ironman to go from a you know, one kind of course and one kind of experience to a completely different kind of course and experience, and just kind of reset and go, okay, this is what we're doing now. That sounds like it's a real skill, but it's a real strength of yours, I think.
Well, it's something that you practice and learn to get better at. Your race planning tool really helps, and it's important that you think about it. And, you know, the guidance you give is that's not something that you do the week before. It's something that you do many weeks before as you build up. And I found that really helped because it got me mentally in the right place for the full distance race. And I had a different mental approach to each aspect of the event because of that.
Yeah.
So it is about how am I going to plan the swim, the bike, the run? How am I going to feel? How am I going to approach it? Write it down and then try your best to stick to that.
Yeah. You felt that worked for you, did you?
Completely. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I give you an example, at the start of the swim, before the event started, we left transition in the wetsuit down to the lakeside. I have never felt calmer at the start of any race. I'm just about to do my first full distance. I was expecting some anxiety, and there was none. And I do know why. You know, in the run-up, you do, what, 5 or 6 long endurance swims on Friday mornings?
Yeah.
Three to four K, is that about right?
Yeah.
I'd done all but one of them in the lake. And the only one I couldn't do was when I had to Google whether swimming in a lake when it's lightning might be dangerous. And for anyone listening, it's definitely, definitely dangerous.
Yeah.
So that one I had to do in the pool, but all the others I did in the lake. So, and I'd written in my training plan, the swim is just one of those 4K lake training swims. That's it. You've done it 5 times. Just do it again, as in training. So mentally, that wasn't a race for me. It was just a training swim.
And it sounds like you were in the perfect mental space for that, because as you say, either anxiety or excitement create the same effect, essentially, of either panic or making bad decisions. If you can go in there feeling a sort of relatively low level of arousal and tell yourself it's just another training swim, that's the perfect spot to be in.
Yeah.
Because I think there's nothing ruins a person's Ironman more than being too excited or too anxious and going really hard or panicking during the swim. If you can get your mindset into that, it's just a no big deal kind of event,
yeah,
really sets you up for the rest of the day nicely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you did a great job there. Well done.
And it went well too. It was quick for me.
So in terms of pace, what did you, I mean, as much as you don't focus on the numbers, it's nice after the event to talk numbers and splits and power and things. What did you come out of the water in and what were you expecting?
So I tried too hard not to have too many expectations on times, you know, focus on the inputs. It was a mass start swim, which I much prefer because you can get into groups, and I'm really happy breathing, you know, each side. Got into little groups, felt fine all through the swim, came out, looked at my watch, they said 1:17 something, blew me away. I would have been happy with 1:20 to 1:25. So
awesome.
Great. Bike, bang on plan. I was aiming for something around 7:15. Actually, a little aside before I talk about the time on the bike. If you remember, on the Saturday before, on my quick training spin on the TT bike, my power meter went down 2 hours before I was taking it to transition.
Yeah.
And I was panicking, and I had to stop myself and think, right, this power meter is not working. Put the bike in transition, worry about it later. And so I went back to my recce ride and translated power into heart rate.
Right. Smart.
So my pacing on the bike was 130 heart rate on flats, 150 try and cap at 150 on the climbs, which are really slow on the climbing. And that was bang on pace. So I did 715 on the bike, which is exactly what I was kind of planning for.
That's awesome. To be able to do that from heart rate. And again, I'm really impressed, man, that you've managed to have this just kind of a clinical, well, it's not working and there's nothing I can do about it, so don't panic, make a plan B. That's really smart.
Well, it took an hour of panicking.
Yes, easy to say in hindsight.
Yeah, so, you know, an hour of faffing around with the Quark troubleshoot websites and trying different batteries. And at that point, I could feel my stress rising. And I was thinking, right, no, just call it, move on. And, you know, this morning I just checked what my average heart rate actually was. So between the targets, it was 139.
Fantastic. So, yeah. So right there. Did it start working again post-event? Was just one of those random...
No, it's still not working.
Oh, back to Quark. Back in the box.
Yeah, I think so. So T2, coming out on the run, I was feeling great.
Yeah.
My brother did say to me, he said, when you come out of T2, you have this weird feeling, which is, well, it's just a marathon now. Easy. Despite never having run a marathon before. I did have that feeling. And of course, what happens is you start running a bit too quickly, you ease the pace down. So right at the low end of my e-pace. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. And I will share something with you. I had that kind of delusional thought of, okay, I'm 56, first of all. I just wonder what the Kona qualifying times are for a 60-year-old. I thought, I'll check that out when I finish. Didn't last long.
So why is that delusional then? Someone's got to qualify for Kona at 60.
Exactly. Well, because I did look up at the times. I'm not saying it's not possible, because, you know.
Dead right, you're not saying that. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'll come back to that.
Mindset,
in terms of coaching. But of course, the reality of the second half of the marathon did bite. And suddenly everything started hurting. I have no idea why your elbows and your shoulders and your neck aches on the second half of an Ironman marathon, but they do. So 9-1 became 8-2, etc.
Yeah.
And faded a bit towards the end. So, you know, 5-hour marathon, a bit slower than I was hoping. But it was sub 14 hours overall, which for me was fine on a hilly bike course.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that's a great job. And the thing you've managed to do really well there is, again, you've reset mentally during the event and gone, well, okay, I'm starting to hurt everywhere. This is one of the secrets, right, that even when people tell you it's hard to remember, the marathon in an Ironman doesn't feel like running a marathon fresh. Because a couple of hours in, all of those niggles and jars in the neck and the shoulders and the elbow, like, why's my elbow hurting when I'm on the marathon? It becomes it's a sport of being able to endure discomfort rather than run. And I think that's one of the reasons that pure runners do seem to struggle more with an Ironman run than people from other sports who are typically people who've come from like a PT army boot camp type background are just used to getting beasted, it seems like, and dealing with that discomfort is more important than pure, I would say, athletic ability, if that makes sense. So being able to deal with that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, certainly the pacing and the discipline and being able to reset were important lessons that I learned, and I will apply them even better in my next full distance race.
Yeah. Yeah, good. What was your, not that we're going to encourage you to have a time target, but to put a kind of relative numbers on it, what were you hoping you would run if things went perfectly?
4.5, I think.
Yeah.
If I did a free marathon now, I'd be aiming for sub-4.
Yeah.
So 4.5 is realistic. And I think in a slightly different circumstances, I'd be able to run 4.5 at the end of a full.
Yeah, I think so. I was going to say it feels like someone's first Ironman, unless if things go absolutely perfectly, that 30-minute differential from your open marathon time is about right. And in your first Ironman, I think another 30 minutes of kind of wiggle room is what you need to mentally build in to kind of go, all right, it's probably not going to go perfectly in my first iron distance race. And there's probably going to be a fair amount of fade in the second half of just getting through it and learning how that feels. That kind of, well, I've been exercising for 14 hours. You can't simulate that with the best will in the world.
No, it is a completely new experience.
Yeah.
So I'll be mentally more prepared for it next time.
Talk me through the last mile. It's one of my favorite things to hear. The last mile of someone's first iron distance.
All right.
Completely. What was going through your head?
Yeah. So a few things for context. There's quite a few team members at the Dalesman doing different events, mainly the 70.3. And the day before, I'd said, look, I'm not going to see you guys because you're going to start well after me and you're going to finish well before and you've got homes to go to, and so it's fine. And then I realized on the run that they'd all still stayed.
Wow.
So God, that was really meant a lot. And my wife and friends were there. So the last mile, I mean, obviously, you know, well before that you're comfortably going to finish. You're just starting to think about how you're going to feel. and I had two thoughts. One was, blimey, this is quite a big thing. How am I going to feel when I finish? But my second thought was my little brother, who did remind me, said, don't screw up your finish photograph by looking down and switching your watch off. Can you just concentrate on getting a great shoot picture? So those were the two competing thoughts. And I think I got both right. I got a great, nice. Great, great finish photographs. And I guess towards the end, it wasn't euphoria, it wasn't joy. It was just a very quiet sense of personal satisfaction that I'd done it. Not just the event, but the whole 6 months of training. Because it had been quite a private commitment. I mean, I hadn't told anybody at work that I was doing it. People at work knew I did 70.3s, but it was a surprise. So it was quite a private thing, really.
Was that a conscious decision to keep it to yourself?
Yeah, very much so. Partly because I think my wife Fiona did mention that there is nothing more boring than an Ironman in training. So yeah, there's only so many people that you want to impose that on. but I think, I don't know, it just felt something that was, I was doing selfishly for me, and felt quite a private personal commitment.
Yeah. Okay. And have you post-event, have you sat back and sort of analyzed the journey from, you know, you mentioned early on. And I'm a big believer in the things that happen to us and around us in childhood to kind of shape the way we see ourselves going forward. For someone who didn't get their athletics badge in Cubs when everyone else did, do you think that was a thing that has kind of driven you to redefine who you are in your own eyes later on in life?
A little bit. It's definitely because the people who I have done events with, like Richard, my cycling friend, Nick, my brother, my sis, they were always better than me. So I'm always catching up. So there was something about, I'm going to do something which is a bit more standout that will impress everybody, not for them, but for me. I think it's because when you get into your 50s, you tend to have a bit more time at work. You can generally, hopefully, find a bit more time to train. Not everybody, but I've got a bit more flex. And we had a chat, if you remember, at Bowood about the value of coaching. And I do some help development of people in my business. One thing I do notice is we sometimes set our own barriers. Even when we're talking about ambitions, you use a language which is, well, I can do A and I'll achieve B, but I'm not sure I'll be able to do C. And those barriers we set ourselves, and I see it in others, but then it suddenly reminded me that that's what I did in my triathlons. So I have said in the past, I'll do a 5:45 half, but I will be able to do 5:30 or 5:15. So I'm consciously changed that now. I try and stop myself. So my language now is, next year, I am going to do a 5:30, 70.3. And when I've achieved that, I'm going to set myself another goal. So if I can maintain that kind of growth mindset language, I think that will be good. And I don't care what the goal is, but it's never going to be a but or a not.
Yeah, I like that.
Was that a good answer to your childhood question?
It was a great answer, because I think it's a really common thread in a lot of people that we have a deep-seated definition of who we are in our own eyes. I can do this, but I can't do that. I'm not sporty. I'm the brainy one, or whatever it might be. And then it turns out you do this thing, and there's now a dissonance between who we thought we were and the fact that you're now part of the 0.001% of society who can complete an iron distance triathlon. Guess what? You now have to reevaluate the fact you didn't think you were very sporty, because if you met anybody in Sainsbury's and told them you've done an Ironman, all of a sudden you're this uber human being. And yet we surround ourselves with people who do similar things, and we often compare ourselves and, well, I don't come off favorably with him or her. We forget that it's a very sort of small and exclusive club of people.
Mm.
Yeah.
But it's also more accessible than most people think.
Mm. You know, very much so.
The training is not easy, but it's manageable. It builds up steadily. You get a recovery week every fourth week. You know, this is something that people can do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you know, I've got a friend from childhood who's on this path. He's lost a ton of weight and he's entering his first 70.3 next year. And again, he doesn't see himself as an athlete, but he's cut fast. You know, he's lost a ton of weight, and I can see that potential in him. And yet he's still going through the, well, I think I could do this, but I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say, well, let's not have I don't think I can do, because you don't know what you're capable of.
The real value of coaching and what you've given me, Rob, and the team is exactly that, is not pushing me or setting me goals, but reminding me when I stop myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? The realization that the only limits we've got are the ones that actually we seem to have created ourselves. When someone comes along and says, well, actually, I believe you could do this. Mm. All of a sudden, it's like a coach can hold that belief for you outside of yourself. And another person believing in you being able to do that can let you go, well, oh, well, if you think I can, then yeah.
Yeah, very powerful.
Mm. I can remember really clearly one of the coaches I came across who had his approach to athletes had a really formative effect on me, that he would sit down with them and say, you can absolutely do this. Here are three reasons you can do this. I've seen people like you do this. You'll do this by this date. And it was almost like a form of hypnotism that it became a belief that, well, if he says this, then I can definitely do it. And you're right, there's a thing that we put on times. Well, I don't believe that I can do this time. Well, why not? Your body doesn't have some internal clock going, well, we can do 5:07, but we can't do 5:45. People can make these massive leaps. actually, we don't know what our ultimate potential as a swimmer or a biker or a runner is. We just have to do the next training session put in front of us. That's all we have to do. Now, I want to give you this pat on the back again, because you're a really great example of someone who's taken their beliefs from work and transferred it into athletics and gone, well, there's no reason I can't do this if I just do this, this, and this. There's no reason to be a limit on yourself over it, is there?
No, absolutely. It's a great way to learn and develop.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Hey, well, listen, let's wrap this up. Talk me through the end of season events. We had Bowood and we had the charity try. Talk me through those two to finish your season off.
Okay, so Bowood was my F race, F for fun. It was 3 weeks after the fall, but more importantly, it was 6 days before my final race, which was a race, a proper race. So I just took Bowood easy. I aimed for a PB in the swim. My 70.3 swimmers were about 41, 42. Came out of the water 37, big tick.
Excellent.
Dialed the power back in the bike, did the run 9-1, had a brilliant time with teammates, still sub 6 hours. It wasn't easy, but it was easier.
Yeah.
And, again, doing a race where you just take the pressure off yourself, I would strongly recommend. And felt the recovery coming back quite quickly too. And then the very final race was a charity triathlon. My business and lots of businesses in our industry support Impetus Trust, the charity for youth opportunities. Their flagship event is a triathlon. Not big fields, because everything's split across different events. I did an intermediate, which was 833K, 7.5K run, but I was racing some colleagues and some competitors. So that's why it was a proper race.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Did you get to stick it to the young guys in the office? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I put it this way. I was very happy with my performance. There is a small field, maybe 20 people in my specific race. But I was like, I wanted to be the first in the water in the swim. And I finished running at 4:20, 4:30 per kilometer, which is the fastest I've run for 2 years.
Awesome.
And I think I came second overall, so it was a nice way to end it. And I, by the way, and I was definitely the oldest person in the field.
And the overall podium as well. God, I love that. That's a that's a great way to stick it to the youngsters in the office, isn't it?
Well, no, more importantly, is the end of that triathlon, I felt great because I was running well, I was running fast, and I was running in control, and it was a hot day. And you know that feels amazing, because we all know that often it doesn't feel like that, as I've explained.
That's the thing, isn't it? If you finish feeling strong on the run, the clock becomes irrelevant. It's just all about that feeling.
Yeah.
That's great, man. Right, so listen, to wrap this up, where are you headed from this point on, having completed your first fall? Where do you see yourself going next season?
So next season is focused on 70.3s. First one is Chattanooga in May, another US brother and friend team meetup. Then the Lakesman, and then I will probably slot one in later in the year.
Awesome
that stuff. That's it.
Good stuff, man. Hey, well, listen, we've rabbited on for ages here, haven't we? This has been great.
I've spoken a long time, but I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it as well. And I'm just thinking back to the first conversation we had when you first called me, and the distance you progressed and the way that you've come in that time is fantastic. The way you've applied what you've got from your business and personal life to your athletic achievement, and the way you've managed to sort of recalibrate things along the way is awesome. My challenge to you as we wrap this up is to hold on to that thought of, well, I'm not going to put a limit on myself for next year. I'm not going to put a limit on what I can do time-wise. Just get your training done and get out there and race to your plan. I think you've got more in you than you think over the 70.3 distance when we get the bike pacing right and you've got that damn quark fixed.
Well, on that point, I will accept that guidance. And thank you very much for your help, and great to chat.
Oh, it's great to chat. Thanks for your time, man.
And there we go. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I love Andrew. I think he's such a great guy. And more than anything, I love what he represents, which is the person who's discovered in his 40s that actually, despite being told he wasn't sporty his or her whole life, they find out that they're actually quite good at endurance sports because it's something that rewards hard work, it rewards tenacity, it rewards people who keep sticking at it day after day, week after week, year after year. And over that period of time, you can get really, really good at the sport. It's not a skill-based sport. You don't have to be a good netballer or footballer to be good at triathlon. It rewards people for the hard work that they put in. And Andrew's story is really great at underlining that, I think. Completing your first iron distance race at 56. And as he said, you're never too old. You can get stuck in and you can find out things about yourself into your mid and late 50s that lots of people are afraid to do in their mid and late 20s and 30s. So absolutely love the guy. And what a great result as well. Andrew, thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed our conversation and I look forward to many more of your successes in the future. And on the subject of successes, I want to give a shout out to our team members who raced over in Portugal this weekend. First up, racing the full Ironman, we had Tom Lissett, Will Woods, Rick Heap, Eugene Stanfield, all smashed the races. Tom in particular, fantastic marathon off the bike. Really, really happy for you. Rick managed to battle through despite having a foot injury in the 5 weeks leading up to it and having done no running. So awesome stuff. And in the half-distance race, we had Charlotte Woods, Pitt Paxman, Ruta Ratavi, and Simon Needle all racing. So really great to see the photos come back from that. I was dead, dead jealous seeing people sitting on the beach and all having dinner together in the sunshine afterwards. Nat and Neil right there supporting as well, our super supporters. So thanks, guys, for doing that and posting videos in the Facebook group of people zooming by on the bike and keeping us updated how everyone was getting on. It looked like a really amazing race and definitely one that you want to check out if you're looking for a late season 70.3 or iron distance race. If you want to find out more about triathlon coaching with Team Oxygen Addict and how we might be able to help you out in the next season, dead easy. There's a link in the show notes to book a call with us. We've got a whole bunch of information on our website that you can read around our training methods and what our coaching packages include and involve. And here's a clue, there's much more to it than just a training plan. If you like what you read on there, just book a call to talk with me or Andy. We'll have a chat with you and work out where you are at the moment, where you want to get to, and how we can best help you achieve what you want to achieve in triathlon, alongside an absolute load of amazing, super awesome teamy teammates in Team Oxygen Addict. We'd love to have a chat with you about whether it'd be right for you as well. Okay, guys, I'm going to wrap this one up. Just a quick shout out again. Thanks to our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Remember, you can use the code OXYGENADDICT15 for 15% off your first order there. Link in the show notes to book a call with me or Andy if you want to have a chat about triathlon coaching for the coming year. And until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.